It's the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris, Dan Strauss, Ian Geist, Tim Weiland here with me. Max is still off on vacation, so our guest movie critic, Jim Batts, is back in the studio this afternoon. Hi, Jim. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. Still flattered and honored to be here.
Well, definitely. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thank you.
When Jim is not going to movies and reviewing them, he is the caricaturist at Grant's Farm, where probably bailing out of there to come over here this afternoon is a good idea because it looks like it could come down any moment.
It could. Even though the people were coming at me in throngs, throwing money at me, and I said, no, I've got to get to the studio.
Wow. That's a lot of commitment for a job where we don't pay you a penny. That's pretty good.
But it's fun. It makes up for it.
Yeah. This portion of the show is brought to you by Window World, the number one replacement window company in the United States, the original $189 window company, online at windowworldstlouis.com. So I asked Ian to play Girls Just Want to Have Fun because the first of the four movies we're going to review today is a movie about women going crazy at a bachelorette party, not in Las Vegas, but in Miami, Florida, in a movie called Rough Night. You've seen it, right?
I saw that on Wednesday night. That's going to be opening today, vying to take over the number one spot from Wonder Woman. I don't think it's going to do it, but it's got some very funny moments and a very talented cast, I must say.
All right, tell us about it.
Well, it stars Scarlett Johansson. She is the bride-to-be in this bachelorette party. Film starts out in 2006, and we're introduced to her in college with, I guess you'd call it her girl squad there. It's comprised of best friend Alice, played by Jillian Bell, who's making quite a name for herself in comedies. She stole several scenes in Fist Fight earlier this year.
Okay.
Very talented woman. Also, we've got Ilana Glazer, who is best known for being part or half of Broad City.
Mm-hmm.
And she was very funny in a movie a couple of years ago called The Night Before, all about Christmas Eve celebrations.
Okay.
And she is pals or best pals with benefits with a character named she's played by Blair. Is played by Zoe Kravitz.
Mm-hmm.
And
is that Lenny Kravitz's daughter?
Lenny Kravitz, I believe. Lisa Bonet is her mother. So she won the DNA lottery with that one. I tell you, she's a lovely woman.
Yeah.
And we thought it's 2006 because they're playing beer pong. It's a masquerade party, and one of the fellows they're playing against is dressed in the Borat one-piece bikini.
Oh. Now, you left out one important member of the female cast of this, and that's Kate McKinnon from Saturday Night Live.
But she arrives later in the movie.
Ah, okay.
Yes, she's the wild card. And she was the wild card last summer in Ghostbusters, that's for certain.
Yes.
So they're all best pals in college. Flash forward to 11 years later, the present day, Jess is running for Senate. I believe it's in Charlotte, one of the southern states. And Alice is on the phone with her all the time because she's planning the big bachelorette party where they will all reunite in, as you said, Miami.
Mm-hmm.
For 55 hours of debauchery and partying and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And I remember a while back you talked about one of your poker trips about the guys not pacing themselves.
Yes.
Well, when Peter, the fiancé of Jess, who's played by the co-writer of the film, Paul W. Downs, very talented young comic actor, you'll hear about, mm-hmm. when they're pulling up there and Alice's eyes meet Zoe, she immediately, on the curb there at the airport, starts screaming, "Shots! Shots! Shots!"
Okay.
So she's got a one-track mind. They meet up with the other folks there. Let's see. Blair is very rich now and going through a tough custody battle, and she's needing to blow off some steam. And her best pal, Frankie, who's, like I say, played by Miss Glazer, she's protesting everything.
Mm-hmm.
And they board the flight to Miami, get in there, immediately go to a bar, and that's where we meet Kate McKinnon's character, called Pippa, who is the Australian, there was like a student exchange or some sort of foreign exchange type of program, mm-hmm. in college. And she's been best friends or almost best friends with Jesse. You know, did I say that? Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Scarlett Johansson character. Yeah.
For the longest time. And Alice feels a little threatened by it. And she refers to her as Kiwi, which sort of insults the Pippa character because she is Australian, and she explains, well, a Kiwi is a New Zealander, and it's kind of like telling a person from China that Japanese is a little racist.
Okay.
So the accent is somewhere in between, I guess, Dick Van Dyke and Mary Poppins and any of the accents that Meryl Streep seems to master. It's somewhere, it varies during the movie.
Oh, really? So Kate McKinnon, who is a terrific comic actress,
oh, gosh.
She can't maintain the accent the whole way through?
Well, it bounces around a little bit. It sounds okay. I don't know if any natives of Australia would be in pain, as I hear a lot of Brits are when they hear Chim Chim Cheree or something like that.
Right. So is she the one who steals every scene that she's in again?
A lot of them. It's like she's kind of phased in from another dimension. You know, she's just so off kilter. And like I say, it's similar to her performance last summer in Ghostbusters, where she stole a lot of scenes in that, but not as consistently this time around. But yeah, she's definitely a wild card. And there's the little conflict between her and the Jillian Bell character.
Okay, now we have to get to the important plot point in here, which sounds to me very much like a movie that was made in 1998 called Very Bad Things.
Exactly.
Which is about guys going to Vegas for a bachelor party, and they get a hooker or a stripper. I can't remember which one it was.
Might have been both.
The hooker / stripper dies
in
the presence of the guys, and they decide to cover it up. Is that essentially the same thing here with a male stripper?
Very similar, yes, very similar, except I believe very, very bad things, I think, took place over a week or so before the wedding. And this is, like I say, all pretty much in real time or close to real time within a 4 or 5 hour period.
Okay.
They are renting a house, or they've been actually given a house by one of Jess's political contributors, and it's all windows. And it's one of those houses that's, practically everything is glass. So this complicates things when the accident happens. You've probably seen it. Everyone's seen it in the trailer, probably.
Yeah, it's in every commercial.
Yeah, yeah. What they don't show you is the next door neighbors, who are very funny. They're played by Ty Burrell from Modern Family and Demi Moore.
Oh, yeah?
And they are playing a mature couple that's frisky. When they meet Jess, they immediately ask, oh, this marriage you're going to be getting into, is it going to be an open one? And she immediately says, no, padlocks, deadbolts, everything. No.
Okay.
And they've got some very funny scenes in
there.
Do
we have scenes of Ty and Demi getting it on?
No, but they're sort of lusting after the girls there, especially Zoe Kravitz's character. They have their eye on her.
Okay.
But the incident occurs, and then Jess gets a call from Peter. And this is the part that really tickled me, because while all this crazy stuff's going on with the ladies, we see what's going on with Peter and his buddies at their bachelor party, and they're sitting in these plush leather chairs, and they're having a wine tasting. and they have a pretentious, I guess would be a sommelier. Is that what they're called?
I don't know.
Something like that, or a wine connoisseur.
Okay.
And he said, now summarize this wine in one word, minty, nostalgic, you're all right. And then as Peter's signing off with Jess, the fellow says, now, gentlemen, we're going to go a little wild because the next wine is served chilled.
So that's the sedate lifestyle of the guys. And
yes.
Meanwhile, the women are
the ones going crazy.
They're essentially doing a bridesmaid / hangover kind of weekend, right?
Yeah, yeah. A lot of people are comparing it to Hangover, but I think it's closer to Cross of Bridesmaids and Very Bad Things.
Okay.
And
without having to get too much deeper into the plot, did you laugh?
I laughed several times, especially at this young man, this Paul W. Downs. He's got a phone conversation with his fiance. It gets cut off with mysterious noises going on in the background, and he's convinced that she's hooking up with someone. And one of his buddies says, "You know what you got to do? You got to go all out, sad astronaut."
What?
They'll see if you understand that.
No, I don't.
Do you remember the news story? Maybe it's about five or six years ago, about the astronaut that drove cross country.
Oh, yes, wearing the adult diapers.
Yes, she
drove from Houston at the Johnson Space Center all the way to Cape Canaveral in Florida.
Yes, the adult diapers.
Oh, yes.
And so there's this really funny bit with him loading up on Red Bull and... the adult diapers.
He gets in the car to drive down there?
To drive down there and confront this guy because, you know, his buddies tell him, it's like, you're like a 6 and she's a 20. So
wow.
you gotta pay attention to what your mom said. Your mom said, lock that down. So he's on his way there and he, you know, encounters some funny people there, gets pulled over by the police and all that. That's very funny. But what I found interesting is the film takes a real detour about the third act when things look hopeless. It looks like they're not going to be able to get rid of this body. And
they don't Weekend at Bernie's the body, do
no,
they?
No, they don't.
Okay.
They try to dump him in the ocean. He, you know, immediately, you know,
washes
ashore,
sure,
you know,
okay.
And they're trying to put him in a car accident. And Jess has a confrontation with Alice that's really dramatic, and people were actually gasping at the brutally honest things they're saying to each other.
Wow.
I mean, if it were a guy flick, they'd probably get into a fist fight. You talked about getting into a fight earlier in the program.
Yes.
This is when that would happen. But here, it's like these little truth bullets are just piercing each of the women in it, and it's really amazing. And Jillian Bell actually gets to do some dramatic work, and I was reminded, well, it's not nearly as good as John Candy in Planes, Trains, Automobiles, which destroys me every year when I see it. He's
mm-hmm.
so wonderful in it.
Yeah.
But it shows that she's got the potential of doing some great dramatic work.
All right. So it sounds like a rowdy weekend, but a lot of fun mm-hmm. and a little drama thrown in there. Mm-hmm. What do you give this movie on a scale of 1 to 10?
Well, because it has that lull around the one-hour mark. It's too long at about 105 minutes or so. It shouldn't be over 100 minutes, really. So I would give it maybe 7 out of 10, you know, because
okay.
I do enjoy the cast in it.
All right. Rough Night, 7 out of 10 from Jim. The next movie we have to review, both of us got a chance to see at a screening this week. It's called 47 Meters Down. This is a movie in which Mandy Moore, who is a star on the NBC show This Is Us and has done a lot of projects over the years, she and an actress named Claire Holt, who I wasn't familiar with, they play sisters on vacation at a resort in Mexico. And they meet a couple of cute locals who convince them to go on an adventure. It's at this point where I wish these two women had seen the Goldie Hawn, Amy Schumer movie, Snatched, where you should have learned the lesson of, if the locals invite you to go off on an adventure that you've never heard of before, don't go. Don't go. It's a cautionary tale. But
really?
But they do go. They agree. And the adventure is they're going to go and get on a boat that's captained by a character played by Matthew Modine, who's going to take him out into the part of the ocean that great white sharks call home. Now, I'll tell you right now, you present that adventure to me, like Mark Cuban on Shark Tank, I'm out. I am not going on that adventure. But
I'll be in the lounge.
But Mandy Moore is worried that her boyfriend thinks that she's too boring, and her sister Claire Holt says, come on, I've scuba dived before, you'll be okay, let's go. And so they go, and while they're there, the reason they're going out where the great whites are, white sharks are, is because the Matthew Modine character has a shark cage on the boat on a winch that gets lowered into the water for up close and personal views of the sharks and the other fish in their native habitat. That might sound cool to some people. Again, for me, I'm out. So the two local guys who talk the women into this, they go first and they come up reporting on these amazing sights that they've seen down there.
Oh, it's beautiful.
And then Claire, who's been on several dives and is comfortable underwater, and Mandy, who's never been in scuba gear and is scared out of her mind, they get in the cage, which is lowered 5 meters under the water, and sure enough, the sharks come by, and they get to see this amazing view. And it is a pretty amazing view at that point. You can imagine what it's like to be that close to these giant beasts of the ocean, but they can't get to you. However,
and there's always a however in life.
Something goes wrong with the winch holding up the cage, and next thing you know, the cage is plunging to the bottom of the ocean, and thus the title, 47 Meters Down. Now, that is the setup for the suspense that is supposed to come from these two sisters on the bottom of the ocean. Will they be able to be rescued? Will they rescue themselves? What happens if their air runs out? They only have a certain amount of time in those tanks. Usually, when I used to scuba dive, it was a half hour. Unfortunately, now that we're underwater with them, we're in this murky underwater scenario that has serious lighting issues.
Oh.
I went online and I looked for a still photo from this that I could put on my website when I post the review. There is not a good underwater still photo from the production company. That should tell you how murky things are there. And what makes it worse is it would add some tension if you could see the sharks in the distance. One of the things about Jaws was you saw this giant shark in the distance. If you saw The Shallows with Blake Lively last year, you see that shark in the distance and you know here it comes and you can see it coming. In this movie, because of the murky underwater thing, you can't see the shark until it's right there on top of them in their cage, right?
Yeah, jump scare.
But you only get a couple of those, and it's not enough to sustain the tension for the whole film. And then, I'm not going to give it away, but there's a huge problem with the ending. The writer-director of this movie, Johannes Roberts, must have felt his story wasn't grabbing the audience enough because he throws in, I can only call it a dumb twist in the last 5 minutes that is completely unnecessary, isn't it?
It's like M. Night Shyamalan stuff, you know?
It's terrible.
Yeah.
The audience that we saw it with laughed. And I don't mean the kind of giggle you would get as a release of tension. I'm talking about laughing at the movie. Hmm. That's not good when you're trying to have a suspenseful movie and people are laughing at you. Now, I mentioned the Blake Lively movie, The Shallows, which was one of my top 20 movies of last year. I gave it an 8 on a scale of 10. If you haven't seen that, it's streaming now. You can watch it. And it's a very, very well-done shark movie. Hmm. This one does not have as much compelling story, does not have the suspense. It is just not in the same league. Here's the only positive thing I can tell you about 47 Meters Down. It's only 89 minutes long. We always complain about movies being too long.
Oh, yeah.
This one, we're done. After the stupid twist, 5 minutes later, you're out of your seat and you're leaving, not because you hate the movie, but because it's over with. Hmm. Now, here's an interesting thing about this, and I don't know if you know this, Jim. Mm-hmm. This movie was not done on the heels of The Shallows. It wasn't like somebody said, hey, that Blake Lively movie's making a lot of money. Let's do another women in bikinis in trouble with sharks movie. This movie was actually finished last summer before The Shallows came out.
Uh-huh.
And it was deemed so bad that the distributor was going to send it direct to video.
I heard that.
And then another studio picked it up and said, no, we will do a theatrical release with it. And that's why it's coming out now, a year later. I will tell you this, having reviewed movies for a long time, when you hear about this rescued from direct-to-video thing, that is not good for how your movie is. Oh. Now, because it's called 47 Meters Down, I'm giving it a 4.7. but I'm being very, very generous here.
You are being generous. Yes, you are.
What do you give it?
I would give it maybe a 3.5, maybe take it down a notch from that. You know, you're kind of in trouble when the director deems to slap his name on the title, which I don't know if you noticed that. It said Johannes Roberts's 47 Meters
Down. Right.
I said, someone's a little full of themselves, aren't they?
You're not M. Night Shyamalan. You're not Neil Simon.
Martin Scorsese.
Martin Scorsese, or who's the guy who did Lord of the Rings?
Oh, Peter Jackson.
You're not on that level where you can have your name above the title. In fact, if I were you, I would have put the name off the title because you wrote it, you directed it.
And not directed by.
Yes, it's an Alan Smithy production.
that's the name that they use when somebody pulls their name off.
The phony name,
He probably thought this was a quality production, although after the studio said we're not releasing it, we're going direct to video, that's when he should have had second thoughts about it. Mm-hmm. I don't see this guy getting another big movie anytime soon. Not that this is a big one, but it was supposed to be, you know, one of the hotter releases of the summer.
Yeah.
And it fails on pretty much every measure.
Oh, yeah. People are going to be very disappointed with it. Yeah, the only other thing film of note that this guy directed was something called Other Side of the Door, but it's probably one of those interchangeable haunted house type found video footage films, I'm guessing. But this certainly isn't going to elevate him into the big leagues. And I hate to complain about the actresses, but after a time, they're just getting on my nerves a little bit.
Well,
they were just
what?
Whining so
but
much.
But I blame the script.
That's
Roberts' script.
Yes.
If he wants his name above the title, let's put his name right before the script. Johannes Roberts' script. It is just lame dialogue he's written for these women. They don't have much to do under the water. They're sitting there in a cage with their air running out and no way of getting out without getting out of the cage and dealing with sharks that might eat them at any moment. Oh. I'll grant you there's not going to be a lot of great dialogue there, but you don't even have some sort of sisterly bond discussion down there or anything that makes this thing worthwhile in the first place.
No, no. And you mentioned about girls' bikinis. They're pretty much in their wetsuits the whole time, so yeah. You don't get the Blake Lively effect from the Shallows. That's for certain.
You are correct. All right. Yeah. So those are the first two of the four movies we have for you today. When we come back, Jim's going to review Cars 3, yet another Pixar sequel, and another movie with called Band Aid that stars somebody I just refuse to go see. That's why I made him go see it. We'll do that and more as the Showbiz Show continues here on the Big 550 KTRS. Dan Strauss, name the artist.
Focus.
Correct.
Hocus Pocus is the song.
Correct.
What a great song.
One of the great guitar intros of all time.
Oh, my goodness.
And, interesting note, one of the most famous yodeling songs ever.
Oh, have you seen? There's a part on YouTube where they're on. Oh, I can't remember if it's Letterman's show or somebody's show, and the guy that does the yodeling. It's like his eyes are bugging out of his head.
I actually think it's older than that. I think it's from the Midnight Special.
Oh my goodness!
Hosted by Wolfman Jack. That's how old that clip is.
All right.
Oh, yeah. Friday nights watching that.
Wolfman Smash.
Ah, baby.
That's exactly right. Yeah, Smash is a legitimate father.
Yes.
How did that happen? Welcome back to the Showbiz segment of the show. I am Paul Harris. That's Dan Strauss, Tim Weiland, Ian Geis here, and our guest movie critic Jim Batts is here as well with two more movies to review for you. We've already given Rough Night. Well, he gave Rough Night. What, 7.5, 8?
Yeah, about 7,
okay,
sure.
Somewhere in there.
Yeah.
And neither of us liked 47 Meters Down. In fact, we strongly recommend you avoid any theater that's showing 47 Meters Down. But now let's get to our third movie for this week, which is the third movie in the Cars franchise from Pixar. Now, I'll be honest with you, Jim. I saw Cars, the original, with Owen Wilson's voice and the late Paul Newman's voice.
Yes.
And Larry the Cable Guy's voice, and I don't remember who else did it. Hmm. And it was pretty entertaining.
Yeah.
Then when Pixar came around to Cars 2, I said, no, I don't need to go see that.
Oof.
And I didn't, but I eventually saw it on TV, and woof.
It was bad.
It's exactly the right word to use. It is bad.
They just made a terrible decision to focus the movie on one of the minor characters, Mater, voiced by Larry the Cable Guy.
Yes.
And he's better in small doses, character.
This happens a lot.
Cars 2 blew a gasket.
And other things.
Yes.
So how is Cars 3?
Markedly better. It sort of returns the roots of the story of Lightning McQueen, still in the race game, but the young Turks are on his tail, specifically one called Jackson Storm, who's voiced by Armie Hammer, and he sort of gets in Lightning's head, and this accounts for what we've seen in the trailer, which led a lot of reviewers and film people to believe that this was going to be a lot darker, because in that teaser you see the start of an accident involving Lightning, and he's twirling around in midair over the track, and it's like, well, what's going on with this? Well, of course, that does happen in the film, but it doesn't quite go that dark. He has to recoup back in, I think it's Radiator Springs is the name of the little town
that they're
all in.
Yeah.
And while he's doing that, his sponsors get bought out. Rusty's is bought out by the Sterling Company. Mr. Sterling is voiced by Nathan Fillion, and they're the world's foremost purveyor of mud flaps.
Okay.
And they want to put Lightning's name on all their products, and they're going to get him back in shape for another race to face down Jackson again. And in order to do that, they've got this huge simulator with a giant screen, which Lightning has really wanted to go on. But before that, he has to undergo the training by a new character in the series who is called Cruz Ramirez. That's the little yellow car you probably see in some of the art or the posters for the film.
Mm-hmm.
And Cruz is voiced by Cristela Alonso, who had a sitcom on ABC that lasted about a month and a half or so last year. And she's finding her way in the entertainment field, and this is a very good role for her. She's very entertaining in it. And when Lightning trashes that simulator, he decides he's going to train his own way by driving along the beach, which is a great sequence. The best sequence in the film is when he accidentally gets involved in a demolition derby, a Crazy Eight, they call it, in Thunder Hollow. And I was wondering if that was maybe a tribute to the old Robert Mitchum movie, Thunder Road, where he was running White Lightning in these souped-up cars.
Oh, maybe.
So that was kind of cool. So that's a great sequence. And then finally he decides to that he's ready to face Jackson Storm again after getting some training from the trainer of Doc Hudson, the Paul Newman character. And that's an old beat-up pickup truck named Smokey that's voiced by Chris Cooper.
Okay.
And what's great about this film, I think in the second film, if you remember, there was just a slight reference to the passing of Doc Hudson.
Yes.
This, you get the full tribute. I think there might be some vocal tracks that we didn't hear the first time.
So you actually hear Paul Newman's voice?
Oh, yes, in several scenes. And that's really terrific. And like I say, the stuff with them racing through the woods and in the demolition derby, there's a souped-up Deathmobile school bus that looks like something out of one of the Mad Max films. It's very, very funny.
Okay.
So, I would say this is a marked improvement over the second Cars film. I think it's probably a better film. Also, we were talking about the other Pixar sequels. I prefer it to Monsters University, which is more of a prequel, I guess, technically. But yeah, pretty dreadful.
Yeah.
And I enjoy it more than Finding Dory. I know people were crazy about that, and it was a huge box office hit, but I just felt like it was retreading most of the plot points from Finding Nemo.
Yeah.
You know? And of course, you know, there being a third Cars movie, it kind of irks me that there's still not another Incredibles movie, which we need to see.
Yeah, well, didn't Brad Bird say he was going to make one of those?
Actually, there was a photo of Sam Jackson in the recording studio. It was posted on Facebook a couple of months ago. So it's being worked on, finally.
Okay.
But I was going to say, this is very good, and it really tackles some adult themes. It's got a little bit of the passing of the torch, which we saw a little bit at the end of Toy Story 3, in which Andy gave his beloved playthings to a little Bonnie and set grown men weeping in the theater,
yes.
You know?
It was very emotional.
Yeah, and that is one of the themes. It's, you know, Lightning has been in the race game for a long time, and it's knowing when, you know, you can go ahead and give your all, but if that's not enough, what are you going to do? Are you really going to keep at it?
So is this,
you know,
a passing of the torch to the little yellow car, voiced by Cristela Alonso?
Now, this is what they're referring to. This is another women empowerment movie. This little car is a little distant cousin to Wonder Woman, because she turns out to be the hero of the story.
And does better than the two women in 47 Meters Down?
Much better, yeah. Much better.
A better script, huh?
Yeah, much.
So Johannes Roberts was not involved in Cars 3.
No, okay. not at all. But boy, there's one amazing sequence in which Lightning is looking at old 16mm home movie footage of Doc Hudson, and you swear it's just actual footage of some old hot rod race, and then you see the little eyes on the windshield, and you're like, oh my goodness, that's just amazing.
Wow.
So there's some great effects in it, and I know it's pretty entertaining. If you're not a big fan of the other Cars film, I think you'd have a pretty good time with this.
Okay.
And
what do you give it on a scale of 1 to 10?
Oh, and Mater is in small doses in this too. So out of 10, I would probably give it a good 6. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, will this win the weekend?
I think it will unseat Wonder Woman. That's my prediction. I think Wonder Woman she'll be a close second. I'm predicting, I would say, $65 million at least for Cars 3, and maybe Wonder Woman will, you know, go down to about 40, 36.
And that's
like
because
that.
You can take younger kids to go see Cars 3 than you can for Wonder Woman.
Exactly. Oh, and there's a terrific short with it named Lou, so make sure you get to the theater in time for that. A nice little 5-minute piece that's just terrific.
I'm glad to hear that this falls more in the line of the quality that Pixar did with Inside Out and other movies, even Toy Story 3 before that, rather than The Good Dinosaur.
Oh, my goodness.
Which was just a terrible thing that Pixar would probably like to erase from its resume if it possibly can.
Yeah, that was a, you know, like somebody trying to be a Pixar movie.
All right, so you're recommending Cars 3. Now we get to our final movie today, which is called Band Aid,
yes.
Which I told you the other night I refused to go see because Fred Armisen is in it, and he's never done anything funny.
Well, you know, I found some of the bits on Portlandia kind of amusing. Maybe it's because I'm a fan of was it Carrie Brownstein?
I think it's her
co-star on that. Maybe she's because she's cute too. That helps too. But
okay.
But yeah, Fred Armisen. It really doesn't have that major a part in it. It's mostly about a young couple. maybe they're in their mid-30s, played Anna, played by Zoe Lister-Jones, who listeners might know from the CBS show Life in Pieces. I think she's done a few bits and films other than that.
Okay.
And she's the writer-director, too, by
yes.
the way. And her husband is Ben, played by Adam Pauly, who just wrapped up a show on Fox called Making History. And he was in, the Mindy Project for most of last season or so.
Okay.
And he's very funny. He's usually playing these sort of slacker, slob kind of characters. And they're having a rough time in their marriage. I think in my review I said you could almost call this they've lost that love and feeling because she's a failed writer. She's having to drive people around. She's an Uber driver, I guess you'd call it. And he's working out of the home on the computer on company logos. And as I mentioned, you can just smell the procrastination. He's just taking his sweet time and he's not tidying up around there. And they get into a huge fight at the start of the film about the dishes, and they're just tossing F-bombs back at each other for minutes at a time. And finally they drag themselves off to this kiddie party that one of their friends is throwing, and they're dreading this, and they find some kids' toys there, like a microphone and a guitar, and they start improvising a song, and they're laughing and having a great time, and they say, hey, we should try doing this. And so they dig out their old electric guitars from the garage, and they're tinkering around with them, and then the neighbor shows up, Dave, played by Fred Armisen, and he says, yeah, I kind of heard you guys, I used to be in a band, I was a drummer and all that. And he's like, well, you really need to get back to this. And then they continue on and say, hey, finally they say, we need a drummer, and they go approach him, and there's a weird scene in which they go to his home and he's being waited on hand and foot by these gorgeous women. It's like, what? He's like the neighborhood Hef in Secret.
This is where Fred Armisen said, okay, I'll do your movie, but you have to have a fantasy sequence starring me.
Yes. Yeah, one of the characters is named Crystal Vicheslav.
Okay.
Who's played by the actress that's on the Kevin James show. Well, actually was. Got picked up for a second season, but they, I guess they're going in a different direction, so that must be kind of tough.
They're replacing her with...
Leah Remini, I guess.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
From King of Queens, she's back on that. Mm. You know why? Because her Scientology documentary series on A&E is a big hit. And so they figured, let's go with that. And apparently this actress wasn't working out that well the first season.
Yeah.
I've never seen the show.
No.
So I don't
Kevin
know.
Kevin can wait. Is it that
yeah,
one?
Yeah, Kevin can wait.
You know, by the way, Paul can wait. Ian can wait. Yeah. Jim can wait. We're all going to wait until that show's over and then watch something else.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely can switch the channel then. But back to the film there. So they start working up some songs, and Dave kind of plays the peacekeeper a couple of times when their old arguments flare up. And they decide to go to an open mic night. And the first one's a disaster because Anna over-medicates herself before it, and she's just a basket case up there. But finally, they ease into it, and everything is going well. And they even have record companies interested. And I was like, are they really going to open mic nights at bars and signing up acts?
Yeah, that's where record companies hang out all the time. Dan can tell you from his work with the Daily Planet Band.
Sure. Oh, the Seventh Planet Band?
That's what I said. There's a record company there pretty much every time you do a gig, right?
Oh, heck yeah.
Like, run up with a contract and said, sign.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We always turn them down. Yeah.
That's right.
We've got day jobs.
You're there for the music.
That's right. Yeah.
See, these people are in it for the music to save their marriage.
Yes.
And that's essentially the plot line of this movie.
Yeah. And of course, they have a big falling out at the end of it. What's interesting, though, is the Adam Pauly character, he crashes at his mom's place, and she's played by Susie Essman, who we all know from Curb Your Enthusiasm,
which is coming back later this year.
Yes. And we're used to her as being, the foul-mouthed nemesis of Larry David. And we've heard her on the phone earlier in the film, and she sounds kind of clueless and, the pushy mother-in-law.
Yeah.
And here, she turns into a terrific, serious performance, and she's actually got some pearls of wisdom for her son.
Wow, it sounds like you like this movie.
Yeah. Well, until the third act, when it gets into a little bit of navel-gazing and it gets kind of overwrought. I liked it more when they're discovering how much they enjoy being with each other and creating this music, so that's kind of nice.
Okay, so it's 1 to 10?
I would probably give it in that 6 range. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So there you go. There's Jim's review of Band-Aid. One other showbiz thing I've got to mention before we go. Do you remember a show from the 70s and 80s called Battle of the Network Stars?
Oh, sure.
ABC is reviving it. And they are bringing back people who were on the original Battle of the Network Stars and some modern-day people. So they're doing theme weeks. They're going to do TV sitcom week, with Bronson Pinchot and Tom Arnold and Dave Coulier and Tracy Gold. You don't get A-list stars on shows like this.
Dave Coulier. Is it
a dancing competition?
They're going to take on TV kids like Joey Lawrence and Lisa Welchel and Kim Fields, who were on Facts of Life. Then there's another one called Troublemakers versus TV Lifeguards. The lifeguards include Parker Stevenson and a couple of the hot women from Baywatch. The troublemakers are Vivica A. Fox and Catherine Bach and people like that. It's going to be hosted by DeMarcus Ware, who used to play for who in the NFL?
Maybe the Redskins at a certain point. I'd have to look that up.
That's okay. Don't bother. And Ronda Rousey, former UFC star, they're going to be the hosts of this, along with Mike Greenberg from ESPN. This is going to be their big summer series, and they've signed up people who only get gigs when shows like this are on, like Lou Ferrigno and Nick Lachey. That's the only time they get work is when you do things like Battle of the Network Stars. If you may remember the original series, it was part of ABC's Jiggle programming.
Oh, yeah.
They had Charlie's Angels.
Oh, those 70s short shorts with the white piping along the edges. Oh,
and the very tight red
satin
tops.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Do you remember the parody SCTV did of that?
No.
Battle of the Network TNAs? The finest teas of Amapolis days.
Now the jiggling's going to be from the guys.
Yes.
Oh, I hope not. One of the guys is Jack Osborne.
Oh, boy.
Oh, please. Anyway, that's coming to a TV somewhere near you sometime soon. And that's the showbiz stuff for this week. Jim Batts, thanks for coming back in.
Oh, I had a great time.
Max will return next Friday on most of these KTRS stations.